UFOs? Are they aliens? Government secret projects? The imaginings of disturbed individuals? Or just outright hoaxes? We're here to find out. Welcome to Jim Harold's UFO Encounters.
Welcome to UFO Encounters. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you today. And it's interesting, you know, we have been doing these programs, the various podcasts, the paranormal podcast and all the different shows we do for 10 years. And we've not talked a lot about the Billy Meier case, which is one of the most famous, some people would say infamous, cases in the history of the study of UFOs, but we've got a great guest to rectify that today. We're talking about Michael Horn. He is the authorized American media representative for the Billy Meier Contacts, which he has researched since 1979. Michael is the producer and director of the new Billy Meier documentary, The Spiritual Teaching in Everyday Life. He's the writer, producer, director of the award-winning new film, And Did They Listen?, as well as the co-producer of the new documentary, As the Time Fulfills, which presents an abundance of, as he says it, ironclad, prophetically accurate scientific evidence that irrefutably authenticates the Billy Meier case, in his view. He is the writer and co-producer of the award-winning feature-length documentary, The Silent Revolution of Truth, as well as the writer, producer, and narrator of the DVD, The Meier Contacts, The Key to Our Future Survival. Michael Horn, welcome to the program today.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much for having me on.
So let's start from square one. Let's say somebody has not heard of the Billy Meier experience, the Billy Meier case. Kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of who Billy is and what his experience has been over these many decades.
Well, Billy Meier is a year-old, slightly older, Swiss man. He claims that since he was a five-year-old boy, he has been in direct face-to-face voluntary contact with an extraterrestrial human race, being initially mentored, taught by them extensively about many, many things. He has taken the most famous and clearest, still irreproducible, I might add, UFO photos, films, video, sound recordings, metal samples. Elements of all of these have been independently analyzed and found to be authentic, not hoaxed, no models, no special effects, technologies not available to our scientists at the time that these pieces of evidence were presented, and probably still to this day. He's published over 26,000 pages of information. Most is still in German, but the several thousand pages that are in English contain also prophetically accurate scientific and world event related information that he could have never had any access to in the pre-digital, pre-computer age, plus many of the things that we have over 200 corroborations, by the way, but many of these things were not so-called officially discovered until years and decades after Meier had verifiably published them. So this is a super Cliff Notes version, but I'll also say, just, you know, for those that are going Billy Meier, I also consider this the only scientifically proven, still ongoing UFO case, the only authenticated case of contact between an Earth human being and extraterrestrial human race. And of course, if that's true, what you're looking at here, obviously, is the most important story in all of human history and science and everything else. And that would be the reason why, after 73 years of ongoing contacts, the majority of the world still doesn't know about this.
You've been involved for a long time, over 35 years, since 1979. How did you get involved with this, and what has spurred you on to continue your involvement?
I walked into a bookstore in Los Angeles in 1979, as you mentioned. It was called The Bodhi Tree. And there, facing me on one of the low-lying shelves, was this spectacular coffee table photo book of the clearest imaginable, and in those days, a lot of people were calling them still flying saucers, you'd ever seen. And I'd ever seen, certainly. Picked up the book, started to leaf through it, and then said, no, I got to buy this. So I think at that time, the book was like $39, and you know, the good one, the original editions have become, you know, collector's items over the years. Inside were, you know, a great array of these photographs. There was information about the man at the center of this case, the investigators who had gone to Switzerland to check it out, the book, et cetera, et cetera. And some quotes in there that I would, you know, find out were attributed then to the alleged extraterrestrials. It was about 7 years later, the next contact, if you will, with the information came about. And that was when I was in a small cafe with my daughter and a friend of mine in a town called Sedona, Arizona, kind of a mecca for New Age and, dare I say, very wacky things. But we were in a little cafe waiting for an avocado and sprout sandwich that in those days could take a very long time to prepare for reasons unknown. And there was one other person in the entire cafe. We summoned them over to join us at our table and talk. One thing led to another, the UFO topic, then Billy Meyer. Then the fellow said to me, well, have you read the contact notes? And I said, what are those? And he said, well, like those quotes in the book you have? I said, yeah. He says, you know, we have 1,800 pages of conversations spanning a three-year period that they'd be interested in reading. I got these and I'll give them to you too. So I returned to LA where this fellow lived, and that you know, presentation to me of those 1,800 pages gave me months and months worth of reading material. And then there was about a two-year lull until 1988. When I opened a local newspaper and there was a story in there that said a new discovery from the scientific labs at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories. And that was that the ozone damage was directly connected to A-bomb testing. And this new discovery was listing some percentages, et cetera, et cetera. Jim, what happened in a moment was very strange. And that is that I went, how do I already know this? Mm-hmm. And I reached under the bed and I grabbed the first 100-page block of mimeographed transcripts. Pardon me, started to read through it. Got to take a sip of tea here. And within about a minute or so, I had found the place where Meyer was told the first time in these documents about this exact thing, the A-bomb testing being tied into the ozone damage. But they also mentioned something to him about, well, you know, as you knew before, and I'm going, that's curious. What's the before? So to make a obviously possibly incredibly long story short, that set in motion for me greater attentiveness to things that then started to become eye catchers for me, eye and ear catchers, radio, TV, newspapers, what have you. And ultimately, once the internet was in my life later on, late 90s and all, coming across all these things that are supposedly new scientific discoveries that Meyer is talking about conversationally with these people in many cases. Other cases are included in his documents that he published starting when he was as young as 11, 14, 21, etc. And I realized that this was about far, far more than phenomenal UFO, great UFO photos, you know. So that's kind of a genesis of it.
Why do you think he struck such a nerve? A lot of people have come out against him saying that this is all a hoax, disagreeing with you strongly. And in terms of some of the photos, I've seen a couple people here posed or somebody here posed with something that looks like an object from one of his photos. Why do you think he's been attacked, and why many people in ufology have discounted his case?
Well, I'll give you answers to both of those as best I can. The information in this case, when you read the conversations as well, which are, as I'm saying, there's thousands of pages of this, and this is a one-armed guy living up in the boonies in the pre-internet days who's renovating a rundown farmhouse, raising three kids, working as a night watchman, and going out on these photo ops, etc. So not your biggest candidate. He's not a Whitley Strieber who concocts UFO tales because he's a science fiction writer. This is a man who's also dodged death at the hands of his fellow humans 22 times. Part of what's expressed in this material is the following, that this controversy that he would be at the center of was deliberately engineered, if you will, to provoke a worldwide discussion and controversy about UFOs and extraterrestrial life, ultimately to lead us to a lot of information pertaining to virtually everything of importance in our individual and collective lives, our origins, the origins of our religions, so much purpose behind it. The reason the people in the UFO community attack it is because not a single one of them has ever been within any distance of an actual extraterrestrial object. Not a single one of them has original information that they are researching. It's all warmed over, rehashed, third-hand, and anecdotal. Now, things like Roswell were real crashes, and there have been about 8 or 9 of these crashes, but they were not extraterrestrial humans. These were androids. I'm kind of giving you I should have given you the overview here of according to the information in the case, but let me proceed with that. So we have people who take for granted that there's all sorts of aliens flying around everywhere, abducting everybody, floating people through walls, gathering their vital fluids, abducting and mutilating animals and people, and all, without one actual verifiable piece of evidence of any extraterrestrial manufacture. The information of the Meyer case also is quite extensive, takes us back to 1915, when the real UFO cover-up began in our, you know, so-called modern world, and that those early sightings in the above the battlefields of Europe, which were extraterrestrial in origin, were sufficiently disruptive events in human history as to cause a kind of conspiracy of silence among the major leaders of countries, including those countries that were at war or odds with each other, because the implications of uncontrollable outside phenomena and intelligently controlled objects that also had not yet demonstrated any harm to us, but possibly could, this presence would destabilize any and all control mechanisms in our world. Fast forward to the mid-late 1940s, when President Roosevelt, also being advised of the observation and perhaps even earlier crashes of so-called UFOs, decided that it was necessary to demonize so-called alien life so as to not lose control of the situation. And that's when H.G. Wells, the author, with a different spelling than Orson Welles, the actor, were, under threat of death to themselves and their family, enrolled and enlisted, if you will, in the War of the Worlds broadcast that was to demonize aliens and get that whole agenda rolling, which would be picked up ever since that time as well. And then, and therefore, any and everything that could be used to create fear among the populace would be deliberately promoted. When Billy Meyer's case is first publicly noted by the powers that be, at least as early as in 1975, he was literally targeted in every sense of the word. And this is why you can see alien hunters and UFO hunters and UFO this and that. You will not find, with any ease, public mention of Billy Meyer. Because the Meyer case is the only authentic thing. It's still ongoing. The contacts have, remained. They go on till now. They are of enormous significance to us if we can break through the embargo here. The only thing to be disclosed in the entire UFO subject at this point is the cover-up, which is solely now about the Meyer case. So that's a quick, in-your-face kind of a thing. Now, so the photographs that you mentioned that look like objects such as garbage can lids, I can tell you the following. In somewhere around early 1980 or so, original photographs and negatives were analyzed independently through several different parties. They were again found to be large objects, a distance from the camera. There were no small models, certainly no special effects. They were looked at by people with such stellar reputations as Michael Malin from NASA Mars mission, the orbiter camera, who said, these are good photographs. I could find no flaws. They represent a real phenomenon. I don't accept the idea that some Swiss farmers on conversational terms with so-called extraterrestrials, but I can't fault the evidence. Marcel Vogel analyzes metal samples, says, I can't make these with any technology available to me as a scientist at IBM. It goes on and on. Now, just this last year, three new independent photo analyses using state-of-the-art technologies, including on that most controversial object called the wedding cake UFO, so-called garbage bin lid right. with, okay. These are done by a professor in South America and also in one of the analyses with the help of a professional photographer in Japan. The conclusions are these are authentic, they're large, and don't take our word for it, folks. Here are the protocols we use. Here's the software. Here's the imaging stuff. Here are the coordinates we used with Google Earth to be able to determine, based on the placement in the photographs, where this object was in relationship to these landmarks, what the dimensions would be. Here's the reflection. I mean, the most discreet analyses have been done. You will not now hear one single skeptic, and certainly none of the poseurs in the UFO industry have opened their mouth criticizing these analyses. And that's because the poor folks don't know anything. And the UFO industry, which is what it now is, it's a multi-million dollar a year industry, it is the least scientifically oriented field that I can think of. It drives me to distraction that people have not only run around representing themselves as researchers and investigators, but that masses of people have bought into this nonsense that's promoted. There is not one actual piece of verifiable evidence of extraterrestrial contact that is presented in these cases. Now, that's not to say that there have not been some other very brief and usually accidental interactions with some kind of extraterrestrials over the many, many years. But let me stop there just so I've loaded that one up for you.
So it's very interesting you talk about the UFO industry. So what does Meyer think about all of this himself? I mean, what is his reaction? Is he aware that the people doubt him? Does he care that people doubt him? Well, I guess he's aware that people are after him. You say his life's been, there have been attempts on his life, 22, I think you mentioned. So obviously he knows he has enemies out there. What's his reaction to all of this?
Well, Jim, this is a man who literally has nerves of steel. We go back to this being a young, innocent, fresh-faced five-year-old boy who starts to have these very unusual experiences. They lead him to become a very isolated in his own small village. He becomes the targets of bullies and what have you. At a certain point in his early teen years, he goes and joins the French Foreign Legion, learns how to handle himself, et cetera, and weapons and what have you, decides that he doesn't want to be a trained killer either. Leaves that shortly thereafter. He's known in the Middle East as the Phantom, a man who's hired by police departments in West Pakistan, Turkey, and India to bring in serial killers and mass murderers. And though he's personally told me, he says, I've never killed anybody. I defended myself, but always, just to disarm or disable somebody who was attacking me. He's a guy who's got his wits about him. I've interviewed witnesses to at least 14 of the attempts on his life. I've seen one of the bullet holes myself. I've seen other objects that he's been shot at, and the bullet was blocked and the rest of it. He knows what he signed up for. He is not troubled at all by those aspects. If anything troubles him, it's the futility of human beings becoming reasonable and becoming unindoctrinated by the belief systems, cults, sects, religions, politics, etc., that have enslaved us for millennia and that now have us at each other's throats. Meyer in 1958, which would have been the third time that he published some of his prophecies and predictions, foretold specifically the worldwide unstoppable fundamentalist Islamic terrorism that was going to arise. He was very careful always in the choice of his words. He had already foretold in that same document the two U.S. wars with Iraq, the second one that would be fought under the leadership of a president who'd be the son of a former president. He named aides by name, plastic credit cards, portable cell phones, the formation of the EU 14 or so years before it happened, which would become a dictatorship, which along with the United States would then attempt to biometrically chip every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth. He foretold that every home would have a television and computer interconnected electronically around the world, and about 150 other things in this one document when he was 21. In 1951, he'd already foretold a natural man-made climate change. In 58, global warming. In 87, not only, at first I should say in 81, did he foretell the U.S. Coming to have two civil wars, one following upon the other, foretold the military movements of Russia that we're seeing now, and again foretold the radical Islamic uprising, which he foretold at that time would overthrow France eventually first, as well as spread through Europe. In 87, he again reiterated those prophecies and predictions and spelled out the exact name of the city to which the Russians would move their troops prior to their attacks on Scandinavia and the coming attacks across Alaska against Canada and the U.S. That city is called Arkhangelsk. And they did indeed, just a couple years ago, move their troops to Arkhangelsk. He foretold in that document from 87 the Ebola epidemic we had. And he also happened to mention in that document the attack on the World Trade Center, which he said would be only the beginning of unimaginable terrorism to strike the U.S. because of its policies of interfering with everybody all over the world and then striving for world control through so-called peaceful globalization and fighting terrorism. And goes on and on. Discoveries on Mars that he foretold in 1976 were corroborated in 2008. We have volumes of this stuff. So his attitude is, well, here it is, folks. Do with it what you will. He's kind of used to how people are received in our world who come forward to, you know, shake things up a little bit with an underlying motive of trying to help humanity to correct its dead-end suicidal course. So this is why, pardon me if it comes off that I have contempt for the UFO community industry, I certainly do, because this information, I've been bringing it out as much as I could since 1988. I just made a presentation in Santa Clara, California at a UFO event. I'll be up in Canada at the end of June at another UFO event and in Kansas City. And I'm bringing it to people with less and less adornment for their comfort. I try to not scream at them. This can sound a little bit like a preacher in a pulpit. I've got 30 minutes with you to give what I'm saying, you know, making a claim that this is the most important story in human history, that everything that Meyer has been saying since virtually childhood that we can check out is coming down on us, because mainly what he's been saying is the laws of cause and effect cannot be cheated. Humanity has set things in motion in its ignorance, about which it knows too little, and it's coming home to roost. However, some of it may still be alterable, avoidable, what have you, if we can just wake up in time. And that it has nothing to do with imaginary aliens and saviors and abductions and saints and gods and deities. And good gosh, folks, you've turned your power over to everything outside of you that has, in most cases, a lot of it doesn't exist. And where it may exist, it ain't going to play any part in your life. So this is why my passion is at a high level. I live on the planet with everybody else, and I see it coming down, and I just... it beats me why people don't want to wake up.
Why, and then let's assume everything you say is true, and he is essentially a prophet. Why do you think he was selected?
Well, here's where I can come out clearly and say, according to the information of the case, because there are things that I can prove to you as well as one can prove anything. There's things I can only say. I can't prove this because it's information that either goes back to the far distant past, the as yet unarrived future, or what have you. Here it is in plain terms. Meyer's spirit, not his soul, which is a transitory thing that we all have in each life, each life, meaning that there is reincarnation as a fact of life, his spirit is enormously ancient and has played the role of prophet specifically six previous times in our world. And five of those names are well known to people. One isn't, but I'll give it to you. Here it is: Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, whose name was changed to a person who never existed, known as Jesus Christ, and Muhammad. Each of those six previous human beings were prophets who were mentored as well by the, ancestors here of these current day Pleiaren extraterrestrials, because this is a kind of long, long, long term spiritually related mission for people of Earth. And in each of those previous six events, the people of Earth could not read or write. The majority of people couldn't at all. Things were passed down through oral tradition or written down decades and centuries later, altered, changed around, gods and religions and what have you were formed, and people went off to ultimately divide themselves into sects with altered information that now has at least three major religions at each other's throats, and which will also take down the rest of the world if we don't course correct. His spirit form has reincarnated as these various personalities. It's not a celebrity gig. Anytime a true prophet arises, they're going to have a lot of trouble. So this was the time when a young boy is born with this spirit. He doesn't know anything, just as none of us do when we come into this life. And we are taught, we learn in each lifetime more and more. The advantage given to that particular human being was that this spirit had these previous incarnations, had enormous knowledge latent within it, and with certain types of technology and mentoring and tutoring, this would be awakened in this young boy, so that by the time he was seven, he had the thinking capacity of a 35-year-old, very logical man. And this was part of the reason why a young 7-year-old, 8-10-year-old boy was having a lot of trouble in a kind of religious community in rural Switzerland in 1942 through 47, 9, etc. So that's what's said. Can I prove that? No, can't. That's why there's nothing to believe in the case. There isn't one thing that is said, you should believe this. It is all a teaching. The core of this case is the same essential spiritual teaching that the original other six prophets brought, and which were in every case corrupted and falsified. And as unfortunately they even knew would happen, but it was an unavoidable evolutionary process that we would be going through for thousands of years until we reached this electronic age wherein this teaching could be presented, preserved in unaltered form, and made available for those human beings who wanted voluntarily to study it, research it, and determine the truth for themselves.
And along that line, I'm sure that you've piqued the interest of some people out there who want to check out the information themselves, maybe not necessarily take the word of what somebody else says. How would they do such a thing?
Well, they would go to theyfly.com, and they would there at theyfly.com find literally hundreds of documents, tons of completely free information. It's linked to my blog, theyflyblog.com. We have an international discussion forum going on there. I've had visitors to my website and blog from nearly now almost 160 countries. You don't have to buy a thing. If you want it, if you want to get the fruits of my labors and others where we've made these films, award-winning documentaries, and you buy one DVD and you just mention Jim's name or this show, I'll send you another one for free, a twofer in the package, because as a courtesy. But let me be real clear, because everybody gets nervous about, oh, you're trying to sell me. No, I don't need to sell you anything. I'm running around doing this and I'm a happy puppy. But if you want to start reading that information, asking questions, hurling your challenges, come to any of the presentations that I make in your area, please feel free to do so, because you are the only person that should determine the course of your life and what's true in it. So I am totally grateful for the opportunity to bring this to your audience.
Well, Michael Horn, we thank you for your time and giving us your insight and viewpoints on the Billy Meier case.
Jim, thank you for having me.
And thank you for joining us this week on UFO Encounters. And as always, keep your eye to the sky. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.